How do we do it? We just say...
Well, we did always make it really goofy. Maybe we have to let that come back organically.
All right. What's up, Sandy?
No, wait, I have one. I have one.
Okay, you have one? Okay, you do it then.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
A beginning is a very delicate time. Know then that it is the year 10,191. In this time, the most precious substance in the universe is the spice melange. The spice extends life. The spice exists on only one planet in the entire universe. The planet is Arrakis, also known as Dune.
Sun, a podcast about Dune.
What's up, you bunch of dipped cones? That's only a joke you'll get. You wouldn't even get it if you lived in Austin, but there's that place in Austin called Sandy's. They're famous for a dipped cone.
I thought they were famous for frozen custard.
That's dipped. Okay, well, regardless, welcome to Sand... podcast about Dune. We're back in action with Dune Messiah. Yeah, after our little hiatus. And I'm Molly, one of your hosts, and I'm here with Lance.
Hey, Molly.
Hi, Lance. Yeah, so cool. So we're going to be discussing the first three chapters of Dune Messiah and movies we've watched in our little break. Cool. Well, do you want to jump into some movie talk?
Yeah, let's jump into some movie talk. Do you want to go first?
Okay, sure. Yeah, I mean, I just like, these are just the ones I remember watching. I kind of took a break from movies and just laid around a lot and didn't know what to do. But these are some that I watched. Notorious, Juliet of the Spirits, The Firm, I'm Thinking of Ending Things, Open Water, Sisters, Lake Placid, Austin Powers, and Sense and Sensibility, and Tenet, which we just watched. Yeah.
We just saw Tenet. Peek behind the curtain. Yeah. We were both at the same showing of Tenet. And don't give us crap for going to a movie theater. We rented out the theater. It was all very safe. We all had masks on. There weren't that many people there. Okay.
Okay, did you see one of the employees with, like, it looked like a sort of fumigator device?
No.
Like a giant tank on her back?
No.
Yes. Yes. She had a giant tank on her back and was just fumigating the place, basically, with disinfectant or something.
Oh, crazy.
Yeah, it was truly surreal.
That's cool. / scary.
Really weird. I mean, like, that could be anything.
Yeah, it could be.
We could be neurotoxined.
Yeah. Which one of those do you want to talk about?
Oh, that's right. I have to talk. Okay. Let's see. Well, I'll first talk about The Firm because I really loved it. My sister is a major legal thriller head, and I have always just really looked down on her for that. But then she was watching The Firm one morning, and I just kind of didn't know what else to do. So I started watching The Firm, like, in my own room, and I had the best time. It was so fun. Well, I always love a dark corporation that's up to no good. Especially, I mean, it had Eyes Wide Shut sort of overtones with these very rich, powerful people, you know, like pulling the strings. Have you seen this movie?
So I get all of those Grishams mixed up. That's one of the Grishams, right?
Oh, yeah. It's the OG Grisham.
Is The Firm the one with Tom Cruise?
Yeah.
Okay, I haven't seen that one.
Oh, so one thing, I was like, okay, I always kind of am not sure why Tom Cruise was such a big movie star. But one thing is he can really run. And it was fun to see him run. He can run so fast. I was like, whoa, that guy is really booking it. Which not everybody can do. I do think that that's a special quality. Yeah, so it's the one with Tom Cruise. He is like a young lawyer who grew up poor and has like a chip on his shoulder, so he's easily manipulated, and they like want, you know, all these lawyers are showing up dead from his firm. And he quickly finds out, you know, some shady business, and it goes from there. But I thought it was pitch perfect. Okay, I guess the other one I'll talk about is, well, Notorious. I hadn't seen it before. It's the Alfred Hitchcock one. Oh, I also watched Rebecca, but I'd seen that many times. But yeah, Notorious was really good too. I guess I was into spy sort of thrillers this time. But Ingrid Bergman is she already is an incredible actress, but I guess this role, it was like, because she's playing sort of a fallen woman, and that her dad was like this German. They're in Cuba. Cary Grant is an American officer who's going to recruit Ingrid Bergman for, like, to get these expatriated German. Oh, maybe they're in Argentina. I don't know. But yeah, all these expatriated Nazis, try and catch them. And her father was like a major Nazi, I guess. But he's dead. And she's like really ashamed of having him as a father. And so like people kind of treat her like a slut in a way. She's like kind of a drunk. And it's like a weird role for her because usually she plays such high class women. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so it was kind of interesting to see her play this woman who wasn't kind of perceived that way. Cary Grant, I never really like his roles where he's Mr. Suave, you know, stiff man. I like it better when he's charming. But it was very good. It's like a really great, you know, I don't know, like spy. Yeah, just the American spy feeling.
The American spy
south of the border. Yeah. Well, you know it. I don't know. Like cool, open, breezy cabanas and all these intrigue plots and, you know, going rogue.
Right. Okay. Well, I guess since we both just saw it, let's talk about Tenet.
Yeah. Let's get into it. Yeah. So I came out, y'all were talking, and sounded like you did not like it.
Some people hated it more than others. Mm-hmm. I personally enjoyed myself, mm-hmm. and felt that I could follow the movie and engage with the movie enough until the end, and then I was completely lost. Overall, I don't think it's that good of a movie.
Right.
I will see it again, though.
Yeah, I kept thinking, this is pretty good. This isn't mm-hmm. great, but it's pretty good.
It's really well made.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it is really, that is true. It's beautiful. You know, it was like a Marvel movie, a spy movie, a like abused woman movie.
Yeah.
Like it had all the arcs of all of those movies. And then I guess obviously some sci-fi time travel business. I mean,
yeah.
There was a point where it felt completely just like one of those right after another where it would be like, the two main guy, you know, Robert Pattinson. Can you tell me what Denzel Washington's son's name is?
It's something Washington, right?
Well, good guess, Lance.
it's throwing me for a loop because his character's name is protagonist in that movie, and I was so frustrated with that.
Untitled movie.
John David Washington.
Yeah, so they would like be walking down, hustling down a street and telling each other about how they were going to pull this hard thing off. Meanwhile, like we'd mm-hmm. be seeing scenes of them pulling the hard thing off. And then they would do it. And then, yeah, something would kind of maybe go wrong, but that would be it. Like,
yeah.
They did that like four or five times. Yeah. Which is fine. Literally one time in a movie, you kind of need to do that. Those scenes are cool. But, yeah, I don't know. It's like, another one? Really? You guys just did this.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was okay.
Well, it was still nice to see a movie.
Oh, yeah. It was great. Awesome seats.
Yeah.
So loud.
Good seats. Okay. Well, I'll go through my list here. I watched Saving Private Ryan, Karate Kid 1, 2, and 3. The Frighteners, Bram Stoker's Dracula, The Money Pit, 21 Bridges, Gremlins, North by Northwest, Tenet, and Rebecca.
Nice.
I guess I'll talk about Bram Stoker's Dracula.
That's the one I was going to ask about. I almost watched that like 2 nights ago. So, yeah.
So it kind of reminds me of Tenet in a way, because it is sets, costumes, makeup are so amazing. Mm-hmm. The music is great. John Williams, it's great. Francis Ford Coppola shoots a great movie. Editing's great. Gary Oldman is allowed to just like go insane. He goes nuts in this as Dracula. He is so insane in it. Anthony Hopkins was also clearly given free rein to be as crazy as he wanted to be as Van Helsing. It's such a weird Van Helsing, and he even like turns into Hannibal Lecter for a second. It's real weird.
What, he just chomps on somebody's arm or something?
He does this weird thing where he smells a girl.
Oh. And he goes...
Yeah, he like gets in her face and is like... Yeah, he just like... Like, does this, like, smelling her thing, which is, it just comes out of nowhere.
Starting to sound like Hannibal Lecter move. An Anthony Hopkins move.
Maybe. Maybe so. Maybe he's just a creep, and they're like, let him be a creep. But it's not a good screenplay. Mm. It's like, it just feels very cocaine-fueled, which is kind of why I like it. Because, it's a fun to watch movie. It's batshit crazy. It's crazy that that movie got made, because the screenplay just stinks. It's just like a frankly boring screenplay. If it weren't so crazy, it would be such a dull movie.
Oh, no. Wait, why?
Yeah.
I thought it was very faithful to the book.
No. And that's what you'd think, too, because it's called Bram Stoker's Dracula, which makes it sound like, oh, this is the real version. Yeah. But I watched it with Naomi, who has just read Bram Stoker's Dracula, like just finished it. Mm-hmm. And she was like, at first she was like, well, you know, that way I can like, you know, tell how faithful it is. And a third into it, she was like, well, this whole movie is nothing like the book. Like, the characters are there.
Why wouldn't they just tell the story? Nobody has just done a straightforward Dracula.
Well, here's what I'll say. I have not read Dracula, but from listening to Naomi, I feel like a straightforward version of Dracula would be boring as fuck.
Okay.
It sounds like a directed adaptation would just be so goddamn boring.
Okay.
It's told a lot through letters.
Yeah, like, that's still. Yeah. That's very like Masterpiece Theater.
Yes. Yes. Ken Burns, Civil War.
Dear Dracula. Dang it.
I don't know. I say watch it, because it's very. Yes.
Okay.
It's very creepy. There's so much creepy stuff. It's super sexualized, mm-hmm. Which Dracula, the book, is like very, as Naomi put it, very chaste. It's not
but vampires are
not horny,
so sexy. They're cool,
right?
Yeah.
And Gary Oldman gets to be like super sexy, and he gets to be like a sexy dude and a creepy Dracula. He gets to do all of it. Old man Dracula, monster Dracula, sexy man Dracula. He does it all.
Yeah, Winona Ryder is a good, like,
and she's great in it too.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah.
Well, okay.
And Keanu Reeves. So bad in it.
Why? How?
Because he tries to do a British accent.
Perfect.
Beyond. I know, it's hilarious. He's barely in the movie, so it's.
Oh, my light.
It's. You're pretty close.
Yeah. Does he play her husband, like, or something?
I've got to get to the castle.
Oh, you're looking a little strange. Nope. Nope. Is he her husband?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Is it kind of like Nosferatu, fiance. The Werner Herzog?
What do you mean? Oh, the remake of. I mean, that's just Dracula. They just didn't have he's remaking an old silent film that was just a remake of Dracula, but they didn't have the rights to Dracula. So yeah, it's similar to that.
Ugh, it was so good that whoever played that vampire was, or that Dracula was, really, really freaky.
Isn't it Klaus Kinski?
Girl, I don't know. I don't know. He looked like a bat. Like a Batman.
Yeah. It's Klaus Kinski.
Okay, Klaus. Yeah.
That's like, Werner Herzog's like main man until they got in a huge fight and hated each other.
Oh, cool.
Let's just assume the other movie I talked about is Tenet, since we spent half an hour talking about it. Yeah.
Sounds good. Why don't you talk about Rebecca?
So, Rebecca was, like, kind of the Hitchcock movie that I've always wanted to see but had never seen. It's not streaming anywhere. You can't even, like, rent it off the internet. So I just had never got around to seeing it and, whatever, bought a Criterion of a movie I've never seen. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, it's great. I really liked it.
Good.
Yeah, it's great because it's like it starts off just like kind of a fun, kind of sad love story, and then it gets creepy, mm-hmm. and then there's like a murder mystery that just like randomly pops up.
Yeah, it's like a courtroom drama.
It's pretty great.
It's got it all.
Yeah, and a courtroom drama. Yeah, it does. It has kind of everything, mm-hmm. and like the tone. You would think the tone would be all over the place, but it's not. Like you feel like it's organic the way every shift in the movie happens. And I am curious about this remake that's happening.
Oh my God, I know. I'm like, I don't know. Even just one, I think I've only seen one still from it. And at that, I was like, what? I don't need this.
Well, so it's being directed by Ben Wheatley, who is one of my favorite directors. And he's kind of famous for like doing like genre bends. Like he's like flipping genres around and mm-hmm. playing with genre. And he's not remaking Hitchcock's Rebecca. He's remaking the book that Rebecca's based on.
That's interesting. I really wish a woman would direct it. I wouldn't, I mean, I don't say that lightly because Rebecca, to me, was one of the first books where I read where I was like, oh, this is a female psyche at work.
The screenplay is all women.
Okay, that's good. Yeah, the book is wonderful. And well, so I'll be I'm definitely interested in that. I do think Hitchcock made it into something pretty different, but I really like the way he changed the book. So we'll see. Cool. Okay. What else did he direct, this guy? Ben Wheatley?
Oh, Ben Wheatley?
Yeah.
He did a bunch of movies. He did Kill List, and he did this movie Free Fire.
Oh, yeah. I think...
Free Fire is probably my least favorite of his movies.
That's the one with, like, just the cars, like, driving?
No, oh. It's... The entire movie is a gunfight.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. It's an
cars, guns, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
He'd also did Sightseers, which is pretty good. I check that out. Okay. If you haven't seen it. It's really good. A Field in England, which is... Anyway, I really like him.
I love that scene in Rebecca. Well, obviously, where Mrs. Danvers brings Rebecca into the West Wing. It's so weird.
And she's like, listen to the ocean. Yeah. That scene.
Yeah.
So it's funny you mentioned that scene because the only thing I had ever seen from that movie was that scene. And so I just thought the whole movie was going to be this crazy story about this woman gaslighting this other woman.
Oh, yeah. Kind of. I mean, partly. Yeah. It's not about that. Cool.
Cool.
All right.
Well, shall we dig into some Dune?
Yes. We shall get started.
All right. We read the first three quote-unquote chapters of Dune Messiah. Mm-hmm. Starting with the interview, or I guess interrogation, mm-hmm. of Bronzo of Ix, mm-hmm. and then the little intro from Bronzo of Ix. We counted that as the first chapter.
Yeah.
Should we just start with that interview and intro?
Oh, yeah. This is a Fremen priest, right, is interviewing mm-hmm. Bronzo. Bronzo of Ix is a cool name.
Yeah.
Sounds good. Sounds like a wrestler.
And he's... Yeah, and Ix is a planet called Ix because it's the ninth planet. It doesn't, like, have a real...
I know, and he even makes a point about that later where he's like, we are not Ix just because we are the ninth planet. Or something, like, I don't know, right? Because he's talking about, like...
Well, I think he's saying that, like, his planet is just called Ix as the ninth planet, as in, like, it's, like, who gives a shit about this planet?
Yeah.
It's called Ix because it's the ninth planet.
Well, it actually does make his point pretty well because he's saying Ix is basically meaningless to what actually goes on my planet, where like Dune is basically meaningless for like the lived reality of Arrakis, he's in prison and is going to be executed mm-hmm. because he has written this
heresy.
Yeah. Heresy. He's written this alternative history of Muad'Dib. So let's see. I thought this was really interesting place to start. Well, I thought it was interesting that we start with the historian. And yeah, it made me think about how, Irulan, I guess Irulan's history hadn't come out yet.
Yeah, that's what I'm assuming, too.
Yeah.
Or not all of it, at least.
Yeah, so it's wild that he has us already working with two historians. I like that he brings in this other historian, you know, right off the bat. And it, like, did some fun mind warping for me for the first book. Where it was like, oh, you know, when was that solidified as history?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was, I felt like it was kind of a way to kind of a little bit refresh the reader.
Oh, Lance.
Like, what happened?
You think?
In Dune?
You think this was just like a what happened last time on?
Well, not necessarily, but I also think it's also to kind of introduce the idea that, like, maybe Paul's not that great. Like, right. Maybe what he did isn't the best. And there's more than one point of view. And the idea that he's being executed for heresy makes it clear that, like, there's religious extremists out there that just, like, are so hardcore into Paul. And that seems to be, like, pretty common point of view, is that, like, don't talk shit about Muad'Dib or we'll kill you.
Yeah, I mean, that's what's going on. It also felt like he was kind of hinting that there was a bit of a cult feeling happening around Paul, that they had sort of divorced themselves from facts and reason and were now just completely going on faith. And it wasn't, I thought it was cool that he was moving away from, like, just straight up religion and more about, like, cult mentality. Right. And I guess, you know, what's the difference? But, you know, I don't know, I was getting, like, strong cult vibes.
I think they even mentioned cult, don't they?
Yeah, I think at the beginning the
body spirit cult.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it's really this excerpt that feels more exposition-y. That excerpt from his with analysis of history of Muad'Dib.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, definitely in this, he's sort of describing to us, like, how the Fremen think and how they're no longer, like, taking in cause and effect. They can't deal with any sort of anything that challenges the narrative of Paul. They also mention that Paul, like, at one point he says, "We do not trouble the Holy Family with trivia," right before, oh yeah, because he says, "Tell me, does Muad'Dib know what you do in these dungeons? We do not trouble the Holy Family with trivia," which is wild because, I mean, you know, prisons aren't exactly trivial. You know, hot take, I guess. Yeah, so I don't know. I found this whole passage really interesting.
I did too. I think that I don't know that it was my favorite way to start this.
Okay, what do you mean?
I found it kind of dry.
Yeah?
I just found it kind of dry. I it's just two pages.
Yeah.
So it's not very long, but I kind of, like, had to backtrack. I was listening to the audiobook, and I kind of had to backtrack it a couple of times because I was just, like, zoning out because I found it, I don't know, just a little dry. And that's probably just because it's, like, exposition heavy, has a lot of, like, explanations of, like, how Paul's powers work or whatever.
I guess I found it so interesting because I was starting to get really freaked out about fascism in general. So it felt like, you know, there's this guy, Bronson of Ix, who I was like, yeah, hero, truthsayer, you know. He was like this alternative history level-headed guy who was kind of being martyred up against this Fremen priest who had been indoctrinated, basically, into the jihad, Paul's death cult.
Yeah.
So I liked seeing that back and forth and, like, how the priest was, like, just spewing out all this sort of stuff.
Yeah, I guess I should be more clear. I liked the interrogation. It was the excerpt that I found kind of dry.
Yeah, I found that kind of dry too. I don't know that I thought that was too interesting. But yeah, I really liked the interrogation a lot. I was like, oh yeah, this is dark. I mean, you know, it's always dark to have, like, the person in power who controls literally if somebody lives or dies and, like, punishment be somebody divorced from any sort of reason. So chilling place to start.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. So then that brings us to the quote unquote second chapter, which is really the first full chapter of this book.
Well, wait, hold on. Let me see if I had anything to say about his excerpt.
Excerpt.
Yeah. If that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose he is just saying, like, the things that made Paul so powerful historically. I mean, you know, again, he's just interested in why. I guess I also liked that. I always think about Frank Herbert's quote about, like, people who know how to fit themselves into historical narrative. And that, you know, we have all... He says that at one point that Paul commanded more historians than any other era in human history. So I feel like that's just him saying, like, this weird push and pull between, like, somebody who is dictating history, and that's, like, kind of... Okay, here's my trip. It's also... Sorry, I'm, like, trying to get this out. Okay, so I also liked at the end when he says that the only... Like, yeah, prophecy is his downfall, but you can't tell that that is true until a historian writes it, which is interesting. I kind of, like, liked this trippy thing about time. Again, it's, like, Tenet all over the place. But, yeah, I don't know. So... I just thought it was a cool place to start. All right, let's get on. We can go to the first chapter.
So this is where we have this, like, meeting, secret meeting that Revmov Gaius Mihaim has gathered. Cytail, the Telaxu?
Yeah.
You said that you thought Telelax. It was pronounced differently.
Oh,
Telelax.
Telelaxu.
Telelaxu.
The Bene Telelax. The Bene Telelax.
Yeah, Bene Telelax. Uh-huh. Yeah. I can't say it no matter how many times I try.
Yeah, well, this one guy thought that the T was silent for no reason. I mean, just that was his whim.
Who's this one guy? What are you talking about?
On the internet, you know.
Oh, okay.
I was looking up pronunciation guides, and this one, I don't know. I think maybe I thought that because it was like, oh, maybe it is silent. And then he immediately said, no, it's not silent. So... You all get that pointless fact.
So yeah, Cytail, he's a face dancer.
Yeah.
And then we also have Edric, he's a guild steersman.
Yes.
And Irulan, who's been pulled there, which is like kind of a reveal a little later in it because, oh, why is Irulan there? Because what we're seeing is that this is a plot against Paul.
Well, and Helen, the Reverend Mother, is there too.
Yeah, she's the one who kind of gathered everybody there. Mm-hmm. And yeah, like, it makes sense for the Reverend Mother to hate Paul.
Right.
And she even brings up Jessica and I think calls her a bitch.
Oh, yeah, she gets really crony for a moment. Yeah.
And, it, like, Cytail, who I see as kind of, I just can't see him, and it's because he's a face dancer, but I can't not see him as the faceless man in Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. Like, just because he's kind of like this, like, seems like he's all like he just knows a lot. He's like a real know-it-all and just like kind of creepy and evil in general, but also he can change his face.
Yeah, he reminds me of this like a tall man in a pinstripe suit with no face.
Mm-hmm.
And blank face.
Yeah,
just full of riddles.
Don't they call him fat at one point?
Well, I think so. The way I pictured him is the actor who plays Uncle Vernon in Harry Potter. He kind of makes himself, because he says he has these big lips and like a bland flabby face, like kind of like that fish that's always grumpy.
Oh yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah,
so you think that's his relaxed state, and then he can just kind of morph himself because he's kind of made out of Play-Doh.
Well, no, he chose that face for a reason, because he said he chose it for a reason.
Yeah.
To make them think that he was kind of dull and stupid. Mm-hmm. And then, like, yeah, the Reverend Mother kind of catches up to him. He's quite plotty. He's like,
yeah,
everything's a little like, ooh, and if I pull this string, what will happen? And he's like always explaining.
Yes.
Especially to Irulan. He's like, Irulan, you may not have noticed, but Edric is trying to intimidate you into speaking, prove his worth. She could have figured that out.
Yeah, so they're there to plot against Paul.
Yeah.
To take him down. We find out that Irulan has been slowly administering a contraceptive to Chani so that she can't have a baby. And the reason that these evil plotters have brought Irulan into their plan is because they think that what she wants is to, like, essentially be a true...
Ruler.
Ruler, mm-hmm. Yeah. Which she can't do in her current position.
It's very true.
So if she helps them, then maybe she can be.
Yeah, like it seemed like they each had different motives. Guildsman clearly just is, you know, needs spice. He's like drinking spice, breathing spice. He's in a little tank of spice.
Yeah.
He takes spice pills.
Yeah, that's what threw me off. Because so he's described as this guy. And I think that like this description is what David Lynch based his guildsman that he made. Because in David Lynch's Dune, they have a tank where there's like this like kind of creepy worm floating in a tank full of gas. And I think that's where they got this description. He's like in a tank floating in spice that has some kind of anti-gravity thing on it.
So crazy.
And he's kind of got fins and he's like flipping around, but he's breathing in spice. He's like in a spice cloud, just breathing spice. Yet he takes a spice pill.
Yeah,
like
this guy cannot get enough.
He's breathing it in. Yeah, he's living,
swimming
in it.
Yeah. I kind of pictured him as the monster from Pan's Labyrinth.
Yeah, I definitely see him as that guy that plays all those characters. What's his name?
Yeah. Also, Cytale immediately wonders. She's like, "Oh, Irulan's surely thinking about how you have sex with this guy." With this fish man. He's like, she's probably over there thinking about like what sex with him would be like. It's like, oh, okay. I don't know that. Maybe. Could be. I thought that was funny.
It's weird.
It was like, oh, well, I mean, I guess it reveals later that Cytale's pretty obsessed with Irulan. So it's not that surprising. He'd be thinking she's like.
Right. I guess at the end he says that like, oh, this is a woman that I can't ever have. And then he suggests that he'll clone her.
Yeah.
For someone else.
I'll just clone her.
It's very creepy.
Yeah.
He's a creep.
Yeah, he's definitely a creep. I'm interested to know more about the
Tililaxu. That whether he's from
He's from the planet.
Right?
Tililaxu. Yeah. I think the planet's just Tililax. Tililax. And he is a
Tililax.
Tililaxu for being of the planet.
Oh, okay. Yeah. He's the Benny Tililaxu.
Yeah. Because I was reading about that name origin, and the theory is really just that Bene is kind of, you know, just means that they're people of this planet.
Oh, okay. And it's interesting.
Also, that this is where all the twisted mentats come from.
Mm-hmm. Tililaxu.
Tililax.
Tililax.
Yeah.
I can try to remember it because it's like to lay lax.
To lay lax, right? On a park.
Like if you had
bench.
Some lax and you wanted to put, yeah, you wanted to lay it down to lay lax.
Or to lay lax on a beach with a book.
like this is really talaxing?
Yeah, talaxing. Super to lay laxing. To lay is laxing. Okay.
So I had a way to remember it, and then you threw all these other options in there.
We find out that Irulan is, like, not a fan of Melange. She's like, ew, yuck.
It's like a peasant's drug to her, I think, right?
She looks down upon it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird, I guess. So this is the second time I've read this book, although I never finished it the first time I read it.
Right.
And I still find it kind of, it almost feels like a shift in her character, although we really don't get to know her character very much in the first book. But because she's writing all this shit about Muad'Dib, and it's so like, it seems like he's being put on a pedestal and being written about as if he's a great man. It's weird to see Irulan as this like person who's like, I fucking hate Paul. Like, it's kind of strange.
Yeah, I know, but it does make perfect sense. I mean, he killed her dad immediately upon seeing him and meeting her, and then claimed her as a wife, and was so rude about it. So I don't blame her. I kind of am glad, actually, we have the Irulan subplot from that miniseries, because I could kind of see her here.
Yeah. The Nancy Drew version of Irulan.
Who's just like, I won't be put in a corner. Like, he won't be getting away with this.
Something that we can, if you want, talk more about in the next, when we go over the next chapter, but it's mentioned twice now that Irulan wears whale fur.
I know. What is
it's
it?
So Yeah, so I guess whales are born, and a lot of whales, when they're born, do have fur, but I don't think that this is, like, baby whale skin. I feel like it's just something made up for the Duniverse.
How? I mean, okay, baby whale fur would be the most evil thing for a queen of Arrakis to wear. Not a queen... Yes,
because it's a sea creature.
Yes. The most treasured sea creature. Probably... You know, millions of years extinct. I can't imagine where you'd even find a whale. Yeah, I mean, there's other planets, but yeah, they love to say whale fur. I think she even wore whale fur in the first book.
I think maybe I do remember seeing something about whale fur in the first book. I think it's just because it was mentioned so, like, twice.
And in different colors.
In this book.
One's blue and one's like...
Yeah, she's like super into whale fur.
I mean, I do want to touch it.
To find out what it's like?
Yeah. It's hard to imagine it not just being like blubber. But I imagine it extremely fluffy and like almost like it like is like a little alien that moves. It's just fancy.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know what we're supposed to get from that.
Well, I just looked it up and it is in the Dune Wiki. Mm-hmm. Whale fur was the priceless fur of the Bajondax whales, a large part of the Imperial market.
So she's fancy.
Hmm. Yeah, she's just fancy. All right, should we get to this next chapter? Was there anything else in that one?
No, yeah. So I guess just the main thing is that we start with this plot against Paul. And it's devious. Oh, you know, it's cool... This business about the guild navigator, you know, the way that he uses his power makes it impossible. I mean,
it is. That's the one thing that I felt was kind of expository and like this, like, plot trick.
Yes.
I was like, okay, so he can't use his power.
I know.
And I get it. Like, Frank Herbert painted himself in a corner by creating this, like, Superman that has, like,
can see everything,
no weaknesses. And then at the end of it, he's like, well, how do I do another book with this guy? Like, he can like see everything and like he's super powerful, like, so they had to give him some way around that so that he could be plotted against.
Do you think we're supposed to, well, I guess time will tell on whether or not we're gonna root for these guys or not. Are they evil plotters, or are they kind of like renegade fighters? We'll have to see. Oh, we also hear about the Gola.
Oh, right, yeah, that's right, yeah. Oh yeah, I'm glad you're remembering this, because I these are very important points.
Yeah,
I think that the thing about Edric's powers blocking, like,
major blocking plot. I mean, that's a definite god point. I mean, it kind of makes sense, because they're like manipulating space time differently and for different purposes. Yeah. So I like, I'm like, okay, that's cool. I get it. And then they have to like make Edric know that he can't. He's not like the all-powerful one just because he's the one they need the most.
Right.
I guess he's kind of dumb. Oh.
Yeah, they kind of hate him.
Yeah, they seem to really hate him. They're both like
especially
going hard.
Irulan. Yeah.
I think especially Cytale. He was the whole time he was like dancing around him, like bopping him on the nose.
Yeah.
He was just being so condescending.
Yeah, but they need him. They need him just for his magic powers. And then he, like, when he has his input, they're like, whatever, shut up. You know why you're here.
Yeah. It's not your brain, buddy.
Yeah.
That's Melange toasted by now.
But yeah, so they did mention that they have the body of Duncan Idaho, and they're essentially brought him back to life as this Gola, which is not quite a zombie, not quite a ghost.
It's a Gola. Little bit of this, little bit of that. Yeah, I still don't. I mean, I guess it does sound like a zombie.
Well, except for
he's got a brain.
He has his he's smart.
He's like a ghost with flesh.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Do you think he's like? But I think reanimated corpse is the closest.
Yeah, I think he's just like brought back to life.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's just like a person that was brought back to life, like by a necromancer, but it's different with his science.
Well, you know, and whenever they bring people back to life, it's like, okay, but they're gonna be a little different.
So they use his they use his flesh and essentially clone him, right? Like that's the idea.
I think so. I think you're right there. Yeah. So it's not like he's going to be gray and, like, decaying. He's no ghoul.
He's no ghoul. That's the name of his sitcom.
Yeah. But, yeah, so their plan is that he's going to come and, like, bewitch Paul. Well, I mean, trick Paul into thinking he's a worthy, like, his ally, his old friend. And then also seduce Alia.
Oh, yeah. That's the creepy part. They start talking about how Duncan Idaho, who's, what, like, 30 years older than
easily,
her?
Easily, obviously. 40
years older than her?
It's gotta be.
Yeah.
One of her her grandfather's closest friends.
Yeah, exactly. I guess he could have been brought back 12 years later in his same form that he was,
yeah,
that he died as, which means like that there's some gap that they lose age-wise, but it's still weird. But it's just like so creepy that they're like, oh, she'll like him.
She'll like him. He won't have to do much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a hunk.
He's a hunk. She'll just, that one's easy.
Yeah.
She'll be slobbing his knob, you know, in no time. Yeah.
Yeah. The one thing I do like about him, and they talk about it openly in that chapter, is like, yeah, he's going to know what he is. Paul will know what he is. He's not going to lie about what he is. Like, that's the thing that works, is that he doesn't have to lie about who he is. They're very honest to him about, like, what he is and what he's there for. And that way, like, Paul and Alia, when they pick up on who he really is, like, and what he really is, that won't be like a...
It won't be like
a surprise to anybody.
One of those, like, rom-com moments where, you know, the jig is up and...
Right.
The horrible fight has to come before they make up and are together. Yeah, so is this going to develop in kind of like a Blade Runner situation where it's like, is he cyborg? Is he man? Does he have a soul?
Haven't you read this?
No.
Like, I know the answer to that.
Okay.
And I don't know if you want me to tell you for real or not.
Well, no, don't tell me for real.
Okay, yeah.
We'll have to see. And also, yeah, all right. I do think it's an intriguing thing. I'm excited to see Duncan back in whatever form. Oh, I also like this Cytale, the Telelalax mantra of your victims must always have a means of escape.
Yeah, like because he's like a gentleman murderer.
Yes. He's always on time with his, I don't know. He's got manners. Cool. All right, yeah, let's, do you want to move on to the next one?
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was all, and then you reminded me that there was tons more, but I think we got it all now.
We have the main things. We have their whole plot.
Yeah. I think with this book, it's going to take me a little bit longer to get
into it
to where I start retaining things better, uh-huh, because it just hasn't grabbed me yet the way that the first book did.
I read the first like five chapters or so a couple weeks ago and didn't absorb one thing. I was like, what is going on? Like, I don't.
Yeah.
All of this is like, I just didn't get any of it. And then rereading it, I think what locked me in was this alternative history guy, martyr. I was like, oh, okay, cool. So we're like in a fascist religious state and now we need to fight Paul. Cool. I got it.
Right.
And then that helped with the plot. So, I don't know. Now I'm into it.
Well, speaking of Paul, we get to this next chapter, and Paul's been wearing a disguise, walking around in his still suit.
Yeah.
He's like the celebrity that puts on a baseball cap and sunglasses and goes to get yogurt.
Yeah. He's got an infinity scarf or like a giant scarf on. Yeah.
And it's not that people don't recognize him, because everyone's looking at him like, who the fuck is that guy?
It's just that he has like his glasses on, his hood, his like hat down.
And he's like just moping around the desert being like, I wish I was free like everybody else.
Yeah, he's such a like fame, you know, beleaguered by fame.
Yeah.
He really is like a LA celebrity with a pumpkin spice latte who is just like, oh, the paparazzi. And everybody's like, dude, there's not paparazzi here. Nobody cares.
Yeah, and he's like, comes back and he's like still he's kind of moody about Jihad and still wondering
if, like, he did the right thing. Oh my god,
if he did the right thing. Yeah, yeah. It's been 12 years, Paul.
Make a freaking decision, Paul. Just stick with it. Are we always gonna have to be here wondering, you know, oh, did I choose the right path? There's so many. Yeah, he has not progressed.
So yeah, he hasn't progressed. So Chani comes in.
With a coffee service.
Yeah, with coffee service.
I wanted to say at the very beginning we get glow globes right at the top.
Oh, yeah.
And
oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I felt right at home again. Honestly, once Paul's chapter started, I was like, you know, we're back, actually. I feel like this is the tone of Dune. It was comforting. Paul was just same old whiny old Paul. Mm-hmm. He wasn't some evil guy. He just kind of was weak. But yeah, there's a glow globe, a lone glow globe, to underline how emo Paul is being.
Interesting note, the guy that occasionally does the voice of Paul in the first audiobook reads this whole chapter.
Oh, that is interesting.
I don't know. I guess they're going to do this audiobook differently. Anyway. So yeah, so Chani comes home and yeah, she starts giving him a rub down.
Yeah, his legs only.
Yeah.
So weird, like.
Yeah, and they talk about how he stinks, like, because he's like been wearing that still suit.
He also talks about how he, like, loves that he can walk around and look everybody's scared of him. But he looks really menacing in the streets because he's of the desert and, like, a wild man.
Yeah,
he's
a
wild Fremen. Yeah. And he likes stomping around and, like, pushing dust in people's faces. And scaring women. All the women are, like, clutching their kids at the doorway, you know, as he walks by.
Right.
Well, Chani walks in again. Sorry, just when she walks in with her coffee service, she has two slaved glow globes, and then we can get off the glow globes.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, they're slave. What? They're slave to her.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's just like, you know, they follow her around.
I suppose they're programmed.
It's a technical term that is just now being weeded out of, like.
Yeah, it's about time.
The technical word, yeah.
Really?
But it's kind of strange that it's taken this long. There's a lot of, like, in technology, the word slave has been thrown around a whole bunch, and we're just now deciding that maybe we should not do that.
It's a super strong word.
Yeah. So, yeah, then Chani's kind of, like, immediately, like, so do you want to just, like, have a baby with Irulan?
She's, yeah, clutching at his calf, like, kneeling in. She's like, okay, so have a baby with Irulan. I think you should impregnate her. Yeah.
And then Paul's eventually just like, wait, were you listening to me talk to Irulan?
She overheard him say, or overheard Irulan, like, getting pretty upset with him about it.
Right, yeah, well, that's kind of like, because we kind of cut to a memory, right? We go and see Paul's memory of him talking to Irulan. And it's weird, because within the memory, Paul knows that Shawnee's listening. So it's kind of weird that he was like, were you listening? Because he knows that she was listening.
Yeah, I mean, the way he sort of talks to Chani, he's like surprised she even brought it up. So, and that, yeah, he's like, usually she doesn't make me use the Bene Gesserit powers on her. Because she just talks about straightforward things about my protection. It was pretty annoying, actually. I mean, not annoying, but it was like, oh, okay, so this is their relationship. He just likes having, like, a secretary, basically.
I mean, it seemed like he felt this was kind of a taboo topic.
Yeah.
And it was kind of a like, oh, I don't think this is something you like talking about. The fact that I have
a wife. Yeah. And you can't make an heir. These are touchy subjects. I mean, yeah. So I suppose the kinder read of the situation is that Chani is his only confidant, his like most trusted companion. You know, he knows that she's always thinking about what's best for him.
Yeah. And she's like, he's trying to tell her, listen, you're going to have my heir. Mm-hmm. And she's like, oh, and you've seen that in your visions?
I know.
Kind of like, oh, that's not how it works.
It's like, oh, how could I could never explain it to you.
Yeah.
You would never get it. And she's like, yeah, but have you seen even one vision where I have an heir? Just one?
Right.
Also, this was like, for Chani, I feel like she was like, okay, look, if you've seen even one vision, because he says, I have no power over what happens, okay? Like, it doesn't even matter what visions I see, like, that doesn't mean anything. But then, like, the whole jihad business is him choosing jihad, basically. Like, that,
right.
You know,
right.
He's saying, okay, I'm gonna follow this path. So, Which way is it, Paul? Can you choose or can you not? And if you do see one where you have an air, like, why can't you see that Irulan is, you know, you, like, take the mask off of Irulan while she's putting contraceptive in y'all's coffee, and then you have an air.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. So we see Paul remembers the conversation he had with Irulan, where she is, again, wearing whale fur. And we briefly see Hera.
Yeah, Hera, who now they're just saying is Stilgar's wife. She's always been Stilgar's wife. I don't know what you guys are talking about, Paul's trophy wife. Right. That's not true. Also, I was wondering what happened to his two sons.
Oh, yeah. Well, those are Hera's kids, though, right?
Yeah, but...
Yeah, so does she not take them to her next... adventure?
I'm sure they go on. Now there's,
I mean,
still
kids
guys.
Are probably just as much possessions as they as women are in the Duneverse, right? Or at least in on Arrakis.
I imagine at this point they're probably soldiers.
Yeah, probably. I mean, they're 12 years older now. They're like
men,
adults.
Yeah, but yeah, so Stilgar and Hera are married,
right? Irulan and Paul kind of get into a fight. Irulan threatens to go and have a baby with someone else, and Paul tells her that he'll garrot her if she does.
Yeah. Oh my god, I know. He's beyond. I wanted to take his freaking nuts out. I was like, oh, you're gonna garrot her for having, yeah, whatever. It was annoying.
Yeah.
He was like, you can have your little male companions. I don't care about that. But if you have a... Yeah.
And he's even kind of like, yeah, I'm pretty cool for being okay with you having, like, fucking other guys. I think that's pretty cool
of
me.
Just as long as you don't stay... Yeah, as long as you are never a mother.
Yeah, as long as you never have a kid. And you know why, or I'll garrot you.
God, yeah, he's like, give me a break here, you know? I'm letting my wife have sex with other dudes. I think that's pretty progressive.
He reminds her of who she is and how he essentially won her.
Yeah.
Like, he's kind of like trying to put her in her place.
Oh, yeah, because
he's real shitty to her.
He's super shitty. Well, yeah, she says, I'll cuckold you. And then he says, cuckold me all you want, but no child. And he is quite, yeah, it's fun to see the word cuck.
Yeah. Yeah. How can you stop me? I'd have you garroted if it came to that.
And then he says, I have no wish to be cruel to you. And it's like, uh-huh.
Yeah, right.
Oh, and this is where he says, fate chose you. And it's like, shut the fuck up, Paul. What are you talking about? Like, no. So what, you have no responsibility for how you treat her because fate chose her?
I guess this is also how we find out that the old Emperor Shaddam is still alive, because he says your father was and is a beast.
Which, again, is pretty rude.
Yeah, I mean, talking directly to her about it.
Yeah. And then she says, was he hated less than you're hated, which, burn.
Yeah, but then he says, a good question.
And he has a sardonic
and he
smile.
Yeah.
He is a cuck.
Yeah.
Such a little simp. Cuck. Yeah. He's like, yes, I'm the most hated man in all the universe. They all want to put a stiletto to my neck. So, well, and this is basically Irulan saying, hey, I'm part of this evil plot against you. And if you give me a child, then maybe we can work together. But if you don't, I think that this is like her taking the Telelax mentality of giving him an escape hatch. Like, this is
his
escape.
I think she's deciding at this point to go ahead and, like, plot against him.
Yeah.
I mean, it says that Paul had recognized that there was something kind of hidden within her when they first met, and that there was something that she didn't want to talk about. And then she talks about the child, and that's what he assumes was kind of hidden, when it was really, she was thinking about this, you know, plot against him.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I agree. I think she's, like, kind of giving him an out and being like, well, if you want to give me a kid, then I won't go along with this plot to kill you. Maybe I'll even tell you about it.
Yeah.
But you're a dick. I guess I'm going to go ahead and just join in on this plot.
Yeah. See ya. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he like could not be harsher of a dick to her in this. And Chani's sitting there. She comes. She's like, hey, Paul, like, really think you should consider this. Yeah. Like, I kind of get the sense that things could get pretty bad if you don't. And, I don't know. Just think about it.
I don't think it's intentionally meta, but I think it is weird that Paul says, this isn't some damned romantic novel we're discussing.
I actually do think it's intentionally meta.
Oh, yeah.
Because later there was another meta joke. Oh, I thought this was a meta joke. Paul's, like, thinking about, he says, I renounce my religion. He's thinking about what it would be like if he just gave up the jihad. And he says, I renounce my religion. This glorious instant is mine. I'm free. What empty words. And then Chani says, a big worm was seen below the shield wall yesterday. Which are all made up words. I don't know. So I just thought that was kind of funny.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. I see what you're saying. Yeah.
That this is all made up. I think that Frank Herbert can't help but do that sometimes. That's my theory.
I guess I didn't really. Yeah. I didn't notice that second one that you're talking about.
So yeah, I think that I do think that that was meta.
Yeah, I guess he just like gets real moody again for a little bit and wonders about the jihad.
Real quick, so like when they snap back to him and Chani talking and she's like, what have you decided? And he says, no child. And then Chani made the Fremen Chris knife sign with the index finger and thumb of her right hand. Was that a loser sign? I thought she just went, like, on her forehead, like, loser.
That's funny. I guess I thought they had a touch, and then I was seeing it as, like, an okay sign.
Like, yeah, maybe.
Because I like the idea of him saying, no child, and then Johnny's like, okay.
Okay, I hear you loud and clear.
But then he says it could come to that. That means, like, killing Irulan, right? So Chani made the friend of Chris Knight's sign with the index finger, the right, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And he says that he could come to that. He agreed.
Okay, so yeah, definitely. And then she says, you don't think a child would solve anything with Irulan? He says, only a fool would think that. And she says, I am not a fool, my love. He's just an asshole.
Yeah, he's being a dick.
Yeah, and so then he does kind of sink into himself and this fantasy of just walking away from it all, having no responsibilities. And he keeps saying that there's some price for why he can't do that.
Yeah, he's just being super moody here. She says, you're the emperor, and he says, I'm a figurehead. And then he says, I was chosen, perhaps at birth, certainly before I had much say in it, I was chosen. And she says, then unchoose, and he says, give me time.
I don't know what he says, I must pay the price. I wonder what this terrifying price is. I mean, he's already paid the price of billions of lives. So, but Chani thinks that he's mad at him because she's gone back to the desert to, like, engage in kind of Fremen rituals to get pregnant. But that's not really
I guess that's what's suggested, right? Like, she's been going back to the CHs to kind of, like, see if someone can do something to make sure she gets pregnant.
Yeah. I think so. And she keeps saying that he's mad at her, but he's just, like, again, sinking into himself. He has this thought, could single misery be weighed against the agony of multitudes? Which I take to mean, like, I don't know. I mean, it just kind of felt like he really can't get out of his own experience. He's like, this is so hard. And, like, I hate this. And I'm so miserable. And can't recognize that he has caused a lot of death and destruction. And he can't even recognize that Chani is, like, talking to him about trying to get pregnant in the dunes.
When she's talking about going to the desert to find a cure or whatever, she says, I know it angers you. It's true that the tribes have revived the old rites and the blood sacrifices, but I took no part in those. Does that mean that, like, the Fremen are kind of using older, more, I don't know, barbaric, like, rituals and stuff? Like, they've reverted, like, to old ways or something? I guess I just don't know what that means.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the implication is, like, yeah, they're reverting to their old ways that before Paul was there. And that it's, like, maybe even against, you know, it's kind of, it feels like pagan ritual versus Christianity a little bit.
So then he, like, kind of sighs, moodily goes and turns off the glow globe. And then he
flicks it off.
Yeah. And then he opens the curtains and looks out. Mm-hmm. And that's when we find out that the ecology of Arrakis has changed, because he starts looking at a garden, and they talk about, like, the book just says that the ecology has changed.
Yeah, which is cool. A fish pond, the garden, and that the water sellers now hated him. He does say, yeah. I like this one. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was just saying, it says, as the ecological pattern dictated by Muad'Dib made the planet's landscape, human resistance increased.
Was it not presumptuous, he wondered, to think he could make over an entire planet, everything growing where and how he told it to grow? Very presumptuous.
Yeah.
It's very unnatural. He's very unnatural.
I like that the line after that is, even if he succeeded, what of the universe waiting out there? Did it fear similar treatment?
Yeah, where does it stop? And, I mean, it's kind of cool that this far-out dream of Dune turning, changing its ecology, he achieved it, but that it has, it doesn't mean much. it didn't bring peace, or it didn't stop the war.
Yeah, and it doesn't sound like it was gradual enough to be natural. Like,
right.
It feels unnatural. It's like essentially from magic now.
His magic.
His magic, right. Mm-hmm. So it kind of makes him look more like a dictating wizard.
Yeah. Who's like disillusioned. He's like,
ugh. Yeah, he's like, I like trees.
A tree here and a tree there and a tree right there, even though you're standing there. This is not important, but did you understand the part where he's talking about, like, his floor stinking?
No, but I did notice it.
It was such a weird part. I mean, it was like when Irulan was coming in and he said somebody, like, spilled pure spice or, like, left melange to rot in his floor, and it was, like, oily and greasy. It was so nasty, but I, like, could not figure out what was going on. Yeah, but whatever. Well, his carpet stinks at some point.
Yeah, his floor stinks because people keep spilling spice. But it seems like the whole place stinks.
Ew, like, yeah. He stinks. Also, he had green carpet. How weird is that?
Having carpet is weird.
It is weird. Why would you have... How did they get carpet? Yeah. Maybe from all these whales?
Whale carpet?
Ugh. Yeah. So a lot of imported materials. Cool.
Well, yeah, cool.
Yeah.
So we're going to, for next week, read the next four chapters after this. And then we're just assuming anything that begins with, one of these excerpts until another excerpt, that's a chapter.
Yeah. Yeah, no more of these I think the first chapter being a combined thing was a unique situation.
Okay, cool. Hey, can I see the cover of your book?
Oh, sure.
Okay, you have so it's like one of the recent ones where it has the stripe and it has like the little picture.
Mm-hmm. Can I see yours?
Cool.
Why?
Yeah.
Oh, very cool. Can you see it? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's great. Like,
it's very old. If you look at the bibliography at the beginning, it just says the Dune trilogy. Dune Messiah.
Wow.
Dune Messiah, Children of Dune.
So pre the rest of them.
Yeah.
God Emperor. Wow, it's lasted these many years.
Well, shall we sign out? Well, until next time.
Benny Talalax. Cool. Bye.